All right, so we are holding on Zayin Amud Aleph, eight lines from the top then. So the Mishnah had told us that 7 days before Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is moves from his house to Lishkas Parhedrin in the Beis HaMikdash, and we had a long discussion about where we learn that from. According to Rabbi Yochanan, we learn it from a pasuk regarding the Miluim. According to Rish Lakish, we learn it from how Moshe Rabbeinu was inside the cloud for a few days, for 6 days before Hashem started speaking to him and teaching him the Torah, doing after Matan Torah. That led the Gemara into a discussion. Why are we why exactly do we need him to be completely separated from his house and in particular from his wife? And the reason is because she might be a Tzofik Nida, and it might be that she becomes a Nida. She's not sure whether it happened while they were having relations, and then he'd be Tomei for 7 days. So the Gemara asked, in that case, why aren't we equally concerned about Tumas Mes? How are we allowing him visitors during those 7 days, when conceivably one of those visitors might pass away and he becomes Tomei Mes? So that led us into a discussion of the question of, given that the korbanos he's bringing on Yom Kippur, almost all of them are korbanos tzibur, do we say the famous machlokas that we have in several places in Shas, where the tumah dechuya betzibur or hutra betzibur? Do we say that, given that korbanos tzibur can be brought betumah, everybody agrees to that? Is it that you can do it even as a lachatchila thing that would be tumah hutra betzibur? So in other words, we're not concerned to begin with to prevent the possibility of tumah taking place. That would be, according to that, then there's no reason to prevent the Kohanim from ha to prevent the Kohen Gadol from having visitors. On the other hand, if we say that Tumah is dechuya betzibur, then the question still is, but then we're not really focusing. Then the Gemara says it's not so much then that we're not concerned about it, but it's so uncommon, so much less common than that his wife should become Nida, that therefore we don't have any reason to be concerned about it. So now that led us into a discussion, a machlokas Reb Nachman and Reb Sheshes, whether in fact tumah is dechuya betzibur according to Reb Sheshes or hutra according to Reb Nachman. We established some ground rules. We said that that if there are, according to one version, we said if there are kohenim tahorim from that day's base of, then we have them do the avodah. According to the second, even Reb Nachman would agree to that. According to the second version, Reb Nachman would say that even then the tmeim can still do it because tumah hutra, period. We also said that we also said Reb Nachman agreed that if it's a korban which is going to be eaten afterwards, for example, the korban ha'omer, then we do try to do it b'tara, not so much because the carbon, not so much because of the problem with tumah during the bringing of the carbon, but because if the carbon becomes tumah, you're not going to be able to eat it, and you want to be able to eat the shiraim of it. You want to be able to eat the carbon ha'omer and other such carbonus, if at all possible. So the Gemara continues with the discussion. So eight lines from the top. Maisvi, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Hoya makrav minchas porim ve'elam ukvasim. Suppose that a Kohen was in the middle of bringing a mincha of cows or rams or sheep. The pashtos, the mincha we mean over here is the minchas nesachim, the flour, wine, and oil that comes with an oilo or a shlamim. So if he's bringing those, v'nitmis v'yada, and becomes tamei while he's holding it, let's say a sheretz fell on it. Omer, so he tells them that it became tamei, and v'yuna cheres tachtea, and they bring another one to replace it. The im ein sham elohi, but if there's no other one like that, meaning he can't find one, Rashi says in this connection, and it means shalom matzam azuman lakach, he couldn't find an available one. Elsewhere, Rashi says that maybe even, for example, with the previous one, with the Omer, that would mean even if they have to go and harvest a new one and everything, whether Rashi means over here the same thing, that if they don't find Mezuman, it might, then over here, being that if it's Shabbos or Yom Tov, as the Gemara is assuming, then you can't go and harvest new ones. To that extent, the mincha is not doicha Shabbos, but it would mean, in other words, let's say we don't have if we don't find available flour, wine, or oil to mix up a new mincha. So they tell him, heavy pikeach or soik, be smart and be quiet. In other words, don't say anything. The fact is, it is a korban sibur, and therefore it is doicha tumah. So we tell him to be quiet, because if he makes it known that it's tummy, then you have the same problem as we did with the Omer, which is that people are going to think if you're able to bring a korban sibur, a mincha of a sibur, which is tummy, then you can also bring a mincha of a yachid, which is tummy, and it's not so. A mincha of a yachid is not doicha tumah. So the point is, my lav, shouldn't we assume that the mincha that we're talking about over here is potem elam akvasim de chag, when it says the bulls, the rams and the sheep means, for example, the ones that are brought on Sukkos or any other yomtiv, which are a korban sibur with a fixed time. So according to the usual rules, those should be doicha tumah, and according to Reb Nachman, it should be tumah hutra b'tzibur, and therefore we shouldn't care if they're tamei, because we're allowed to l'chatchila bring them as tamei. The same thing obviously would apply to the parim elam and kvasim of other yom tovim. Tosfos Rialovan says, we're just mentioning those because you have the greatest number of those, but the same thing would apply to any other korban sibur that has a fixed time, the tamid, the musaf of Shabbos, the musaf of any other yom tov, etc. So according to Reb Nachman, why does he have to tell them that it's Tomei so that they can get another one if possible, if according to him, that's not necessary? The answer is, Omalach Reb Nachman. Reb Nachman can answer you, Loi, that's not what it means. The Parim Elam Akvasim over here means actually different korbanos that don't meet the criteria of being Doicha Tumah. Parim would be para vodizara. The Parim in this connection is not the Parim that you bring on Yom Tovim as a Korban Musaf, but rather the par or Parim that you bring if the Jewish people mistakenly worship Ravadazara, where they have to bring a par for an oila and a sorer for a chatas. You actually have a machlokas and hodius, whether they bring one on behalf of the whole Jewish people. Or you have, I think, Rabbi Shimon or Rabbi Yehuda, I think it is, says over there that each shevet by itself is called a kohol, and therefore you need a separate par and sorer for each one. Whatever the case, the parim are oilus, and therefore they need a minchas tesachim like any other. Now that is a korban sibur, but it's not a but afal gav de tzibuhu, even though it's a korban sibur, kiven de lekvia lezman, since it doesn't have a fixed time to bring it, because unlike the korban tamid you have in the morning and in the afternoon every day, the musaf of Shabbos is every Shabbos, the musaf of Rosh Chodesh is every Rosh Chodesh, and so forth. It's kavua lezman. This one, there's no fixed time for it. Whenever it should happen, the Jewish people mistakenly worship Abba Dezara based on a psak of the Sanhedrin, and then they realize they're mistake and they bring this korban. So that kind, therefore, so since it doesn't have a fixed time, it's not in fact doicha tumah. Well, it is doicha tumah, but therefore mahadrinan. So at least even Reb Nachman is going to say, fine, it's doicha tumah, but nevertheless, we are going to attempt. At least I agree, says Reb Nachman. In that case, at least it's not going to be tumah hutra b'tzibur. At most, it'll be tumah d'chuya b'tzibur, and therefore we're going to have to try to get a new korban mincha. We're going to have to try to get a new minchas nesachim if possible. That's as far as the parim. Similarly, elim means be'eloi shel Aaron. The ram we're talking about over here is not just any old ram. It's the one that Aaron brings, or the kohen gadol brings, as his personal korban on Yom Kippur. Same problem in reverse. Afagav de kviya lezman. That one has a fixed time because it's meant to be brought on Yom Kippur, but kiven de yachidu, but it is a korban of a yachid. Mahadrin, and therefore we're going to try to avoid bringing it betruma if possible, and bring it betahara. So Tosfos discusses over here, and there was a point that was brought up by the Mefoshim before, that you have two personal korbanos of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. You have this one, and you also have the par that the par of the Kohen Gadol. The difference is that he brings on Yom Kippur. The difference is that one, many of the other korbanos depend on it. For example, you can't sprinkle the blood of the Sur, Lashem, in the Heichel, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and in the Heichel, until the blood of the par is sprinkled over there. So that one, even though it's a korban yachid, is counted almost like a korban sibur, because korbanos sibur depend on it. Here we're talking about the ayil, which doesn't have that dispensation. Therefore, the only thing we can say is that it is a korban yochid. In fact, if the Kohen Gadol himself was Tomei, then he might not be able to bring it. It's possible that somebody else might have to bring that particular korban. At least to the extent of the Nesachim, we can say that we could bring it betuma if necessary, but we would prefer to bring it betara, because it is, after all, a korban yochid. Okay, and kvasim. And when it comes to sheep of the Braisa, means bekeves haboyim ha'omer. That means specifically not just any sheep of the korban mincha of the musafim. It means the sheep, the two sheep that are brought together with the korban ha'omer. where there, we're not talking about, when we say the mincha, we don't mean minchas nesachim, which is going to be sprinkled or burnt on the mizbeach. We mean the korban omer, which is the mincha that accompanies it, which, as we said before, the ikashirayim la'achila, those leftover parts of the korban which need to be eaten. And we said before, Rav Nachman agrees that when there's that, when you have korbanos that are supposed to be eaten, then we try to do it betara as much as possible, because we want the kohenim to be able to eat the mincha. So therefore, Rav Nachman could say that braisa doesn't contradict me, because there's none of the korbanos that it's talking about are ones that meet my criteria. For it to be that tumma hutra b'tzibur would be that it's a korban sibur that has a fixed time, and that the shirayim of it don't need to be eaten. In this case, the parim is the parim is not kavur leizman. The ayil is not a korban sibur, and the kvasim, the mincha that accompanies them, is meant to be eaten. Okay, so the Gemara says meisvi. I have another contradiction. On Rav Nachman again, that Rav Nachman is saying that tuma hutra b'tzibur, meaning that once there's tuma, then we don't worry about it at all. We go ahead and do it even l'chatchila. We don't even try to find tahorim to do it. But a braisa says dam shenitma, if the blood of a korban becomes tame, the zorkoi, and you sprinkle that on the mizbeach anyway, b'shogig hutza, if it was done if it was b'shogig, then the korban is accepted. B'mezid loy hutza, if it was done b'mezid, then the korban is not accepted. Rashi explains that actually midaraisa would work either way, but midrabanan, we make a knas and we say the meat of it can't be eaten. We do still say the owner is still yotze his korban, and we have to, because once he's yotze on a daraisa level, and once the person or the individual or the tzibur, we're going to talk about in a second what kind of korban this is, once they're yotze their korban on a daraisa level, the chachamim can't tell them bring another korban, because you can't bring cholin into the azara. And anyway, the point is, the fact that the Chachamim made such a takana means that it's not a l'chatchila dika thing. So, and even only b'shogeg, we're saying hurtza, you need the tzitz in order to make it acceptable. That implies, if we're talking about a korban yach, about a korban sibur, that implies that tumor is not hurtza, it's only dechuya, like Rav Sheshes. The answer is kitanya hi di yachid. That braiser of Nachman can say is talking about a korban of a yachid. A korban of a yachid, of course, is not doicha tuma. So therefore, yeah, if the blood became tome, then we can start talking about what happens if it were, what happens b'shogeg versus b'mezid. But if you're right, if it was a korban sibur, then it wouldn't make a difference. Next, Toshma, let's bring another proof. A braiser says, al ma hatzitz miratza. And what now? We learned in Pesachim, the Gemara mentions throughout Shas in different places, that you have certain cases where a korban would otherwise be possible because of tumah, and the tzitz makes the korban acceptable. Now there are a number of differences between that and what we were talking about, tumah dechuya or hutra b'tzibur. Rashi mentions the differences include that. When it comes to you have for a yochid, you need the tzitz. For a korban sibur, we're going to say maybe you don't need the tzitz, because being that it's a korban sibur already, you can bring it b'truma anyway. But for a yochid, you need the tzitz to make it acceptable. On the other hand, the difference is that tumah hutra d'chuya b'tzibur would apply only to tumas mes, as we learned in Pesachim. If, for example, the tzibur are tmeim from zavim or boil and nidus or whatever, then we still don't say that tumah hutra or dechuya b'tzibur. In the case of the korban pesach, for example, we said that they would have to be they can't bring pesach rishon with that kind of tumah. On the other hand, when we say that the tzitz is meratza, then it means that it's meratza for even for such things. But on the flip side of it is that the tzitz is only meratza for tumas basar. Only where the meat of the korban is tame, not where the people who are bringing it are tame. So you have several differences between the tzitz and tumah hutra d'chuya b'tzibur. So the braisa says, al ma tzitz meratza, what does the tzitz make acceptable of a korban? Al adam, if the blood of a korban became tame, v'al abasa v'al achelev, or on the meat and the chelev, Shenitma, where they became tame, ben b'shogeg, ben b'mezid, ben b'onus, ben b'rotzen, whether b'shogeg, b'mezid, or b'onus, or b'rotzen, Rashi in several places explains that Rotzon and mezid are essentially the same thing. The difference is when we talk shogig, the opposite of shogig is mezid. Shogig would be, for example, they didn't know that it's allowed to touch this. And mezid would mean they knew and they did it anyway. Whereas onus would mean that something unavoidable happened. And the flip side of onus is rotzon, where they wanted it to happen. But so it's not really four cases, it's really three, but whatever the case, where those become tame in any case, bein b'yochid, bein b'tzibur, whether yochid or tzibur. Now this braisa, by the way, is saying that the tzitz is meratza, whether it was b'shogeg, whether it was b'mezid. The previous braisa had distinguished between b'shogeg and b'mezid, where it said b'shogeg it's allowed, b'mezid it's not allowed. So one point is, we said that Rashi had said that midrabanan, it's no good. Here we're talking about what happens to Araisa, that the tzitz helps it. But also the Gemara in Psachim and in some other places discusses a possibility. What do we mean by that there can be two possibilities, right? Machlokes about it in Psachim. Do we mean that when we say b'shogeg and b'mezid in the first braisa, do we mean that the blood became tomei b'shogeg versus it became tomei b'mezid, and then let's say it became tomei b'shogeg and then they nevertheless knew that it was tomei and they sprinkled it? Are we saying that would be acceptable? But if it had become tomei b'mezid, then it wouldn't work, at least d'rabbanan. And the meat of the korban couldn't be eaten? Or is it the other way around, that even if it became tomei, that however it became tomei, we don't care, but we care when it's sprinkled on the mizbeach, are they doing that b'shogeg or b'mezid? It's machlokas in the Gemara and Psachim over there. Whatever the case, so the point is that our braisa, the last braisa we quoted over here, says that the tzitz helps for yochid or for tzibur. So if he's sakodaitach tumah heter he b'tzibur. Now, if you're going to tell me that tumah is hutra b'tzibur, like Rav Nachman, lama li l'ratzuyi. Why do we need the tzitz to be meratzeh? According to Rav Nachman, tumah hutra b'tzibur, there's nothing for the tzitz to accomplish anyway. The answer is amalach Rav Nachman ki katoni hatzitz meratzeh adi yochid. You know what? As a matter of fact, yeah. It does mention the tzibur, but it's when it talks about the tzitz being meratza, it's referring only to the yachid. In other words, when it mentions tzibur, it's mentioning the tzibur to stress that no matter what happens, b'shogeg, b'mezid, etc., it's kosher b'tzibur, but not that you need the tzitz for it. It's mentioning the yachid. And it's mentioning the tzitz in connection specifically with the yochid. In other words, in effect, Rav Nachman is saying you have to sort of break up the braisa. You have to say that the braisa is saying that all these cases would be kosher b'yochid or b'tzibur, but the difference is b'tzibur, they're kosher because tumo hutra b'tzibur, and b'yochid, they're kosher because of the tzitz. So the Iboy say, I feel the tame of tzibur, or you could say even Rav Nachman could answer that it is talking about the korban of a tzibur. But again, Bahanach Dolek Vila Huzman. We said before, Rav Nachman says that the whole concept of Tuma Hutra B'tzibur, according to him, is only for a korban tzibur that has a fixed time. This doesn't have a fixed, let's say you have a korban tzibur that doesn't have a fixed time. For example, we said before the Purim of Avodah Zarah, or other examples like that, where the tzibur brings a korban, brings an unscheduled korban because of something they did. A par helam davashal tzibur would be another example. So those, the Brais has to tell us that if the meat or the chalev, or whatever, that if the meat and the chalev or the blood or whatever became tamei, then you need the tzitz to make it acceptable, because otherwise we wouldn't say tumah hutra b'tzibur, seeing as how it is a korban tzibur, but it's not one that has a kavur time. Okay, so that braisa can work. That braisa can work according to Rav Nachman as well. Earlier, by the way, when we have the when the Gemara had brought the braisa about dam shenitma, and we said that if it was b'mezid loy hurtza, Tosfos asks that one second, when we say loy hurtza or loy hurtza, we're talking about whether you can eat the meat. That has nothing to do with tumah hutra b'tzibur. We said before that if the korban is tamei, that if korban tzibur is tamei, you still can't eat it. So Tosfos ends up answering that if we say tumah hutra b'tzibur, then Sure, that means if the shiraim or the meat themselves become tameh, then the tzibur is not going to be able to eat it. But if only the blood became tameh, then maybe then we're going to say tumah hutra b'tzibur. Maybe even the meat should be kosher to eat. Why are we saying memezid lehutza? And again, the answer was that wasn't talking according to Rav Nachman. It wasn't talking about a korban tzibur. It was talking about a korban yachid. Fine. Maisvi. The Gemara says I have another contradiction. I'm not sure, by the way, I'd have to look it up, probably in Sfarim that deal with Klolei Ashas, why it is that sometimes the Gemara is saying Meisvi, and sometimes the Gemara is saying, Toshma. So Meisvi, the Gemara says, I have another contradiction on Rav Nachman. The Braisa starts out as follows. The Pasuk says, V'nosa Aaron as Avona Kadoshim. That, you have the tzitz of the Kohen Gadol, and with the tzitz, Aaron will bear, meaning will remove the guilt of the Kodshim. So we have to figure out, what does that mean? What problem is there with Kodshim that the tzitz takes care of? We learned this in Pesachim as well. V'chi eza oven hu noise. What avera, what thing that would otherwise be an avera and make the Kodshim possible, and also to, and that would make the Kodshim possible, does the tzitz take care of? Im avon pigul, does it mean the avera of pigul? Can't harik vanem lo yerotze. The pasuk says lo yerotze, it will not be made acceptable, meaning, in other words, the tzitz can't help with it. The im avon noiser, and if the avera of noiser, harik vanem lo yechoshev. The pasuk says, and it lo yechoshev, it won't be thought, meaning it won't be acceptable. Now, this is the girsa that Rashi has. There was an older girsa the other way around, that by pigul lo yechoshev and noiser lo yerotz. Rashi explains the key thing is like this. The reason why Rashi is gurdus the way we have it in the Gemara over here is like this. The words pigul and noiser over here do not mean what they usually mean throughout Shas. We know usually what pigul is throughout Shas. It means where the Kohen shechted the korban, having in mind that he's going to eat it or sprinkle the blood of it beyond the time that he's allowed to. So I'm shechting the korban today. I'm having in mind that the zrika I'm going to be doing tomorrow, that would make it pigul. And on the other hand, noiser, we know, means that when you have leftover pieces of a korban and you eat them beyond the time. Rashi says that's not what it means over here. Pigul over here means that he has a thought of chutz l'mekoymoi. So usually we don't call that pigul. Usually we call that posel, where he has in mind, let's say, that he's going to sprinkle the blood outside the azaro, eat the meat outside of the azaro, Yerushalayim, depending what kind of korban it is. That's what we mean by over here by pigul. Even though that's not the usual word, that's not the usual meaning of pigul, we do find some other gemaras that call it that way. The Gemara explains in Zvachim that is possible on the basis of the Pasuk Lo Yerotze. So it can't be, in other words, that's the kind of thing that the tzitz takes care of. Noiso would mean what we usually call pigul, in other words, that you intended to eat from the korban after the time. You intended to sprinkle the blood of the korban after the time. Usually we call that pigul. Here, in this context, we call that noiso. In other words, the point is, Rashi says it can't be that we mean noiser as the usual thing, pieces of the korban left over, because once the korban was brought, once the blood was sprinkled on the mizbeach, it's kosher. That's it. It doesn't matter if the meat of it then was left beyond the time, then it doesn't matter. We don't say that we don't say it retroactively as passels the korban. So there's obviously no reason to refer to that over here. Therefore, noiser over here must mean what we usually call pigul, and pigul over here must mean chutz l'mekoymoi. So the Braisa is saying, therefore, that the tzitz doesn't help with either of those things. Tosfos has a long discussion about that. You can see a Tosfos that begins over here two lines from the bottom and continues over a good part of the next Amud. And Tosfos says, no, that not necessarily do we have to change the girsa like Rashi is saying. In fact, we could, pigul and noiser could mean what they usually mean over here. The pigul would be, we had a thought of chutz l'zmanoi, and noiser would be a part of a korban that's left over. You're going to say, as far as noiser, what do you mean? That after it became kosher, how does it become possible again? So Tosfos brings something in connection with Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, where we have that Rabbi Akiva says that after a person can become tahor, after, for example, the after a zava, etc., after they became kosher, they might become posel again that same day. So therefore, on the same token, you could have conceivably, according to the Makiva, that a noiser, if you left over pieces of a korban, retroactively it would posel the korban, and so the posek is saying over here that don't think that tzitz helps with that. Anyway, the point is, so once we've excluded pigul and noiser, whether according to either definition, according to Rashi, meaning chutz l'mekoymoi and chutz l'zmanoi, or whether according to Tosfos, the regular, whether according to Tosfos, chutz l'zmanoi and noiser, so then ha ein noiser, so therefore, by elimination, what is there that the tzitz could take care of is ela avon tumah, only the Avera, where there's Tuma involved with the carbon, Shohutra, Miklola, but Sibur, and the reason why we're going to be Makel on that and say that the Tzitz helps with that is because we also find that there is a Heter for it by the Tzibur. So therefore, in other words, once we find one Kula in it, that the Tzibur are able to bring Karbonus for Tuma, then we also use another Kula and say that therefore the Tzitz can also help for Tuma. Which Tosfos asked the question again. I mean, why do we need that? If we're saying that there's nothing else that it could be, then obviously it must mean Tumah because we eliminated everything else. So Tosfos says, okay, the fact is still, even though we eliminated everything else, we still need to find something that was Mutter Miklola. We still need to find something where there is a Heter on it someplace else. Namely, for example, and Tosfos goes through over there, actually, the Gemara in Menachos goes through a couple of other possibilities. Why don't we say, for example, that it would apply to, let's say, the Kohen does the Avodah with his left hand, where normally that would be possible, but on Yom Kippur, as we're going to have later in the Masechta, the Kohen Gadol does carry in the spoonful of Torahs into the Kodesh HaKadoshim in his left hand. So why don't we say that that's something? And the answer is that the expression Avon implies that there was something that would otherwise be an Avodah, but in this case, we're doche it and we allow it to take place. So Tosfos goes through over here that all these things we mentioned, pigul and noiser, there were also exceptions, but never, and only because it said lo yechoshev and lo yerotze, are we saying that the tzitz doesn't help with them. So ultimately, in other words, we need both. We need something that we eliminated all the other possibilities, but we still need something that huter miklaloi and that fits the definition in the pasuk of avoin that needs to be pushed away. As opposed to, for example, using the left hand on Yom Kippur, where it doesn't need to be pushed away. The Kohen Gadol does that l'chatchila. Okay. The point is, the Braisa used the expression to hutra, that it became mutter, v'kashel Rav Sheshes. So now, isn't that a problem for Rav Sheshes? According to Rav Sheshes, that tumah d'chuya b'tzibur, why is the Braisa using the expression avon tumah shahutra miklola b'tzibur? It should say shetchuya b'tzibur. The answer is Rav Sheshes would say Tanoihi. It's actually Machloikas Tanoim, this question of whether Dechuya or Hutra, it's not a new Machloikas between me and Rav Nachman, it's actually a previous Machloikas of Tanoim. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Tzitz. Now, regarding this, that we say that the Tzitz helps to make a korban kosher, when does it work? Bein sheyeshne al mitzchay, bein sheyeshne al mitzchay meratza, divid Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon says it helps, it does its job, whether the Kohen Gadol is actually wearing it on his forehead right now, or whether he's not. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Oidehu al mitzchay meratza. If the tzitz is still on the Kohen Gadol's forehead, Rashi says when the tumah happens to the korban, some of the other mafoshim say maybe it means when the korban was actually brought. Whatever the case, if it was on his forehead then, meratze, then it helps to make the korban acceptable. And again, like we said on Amud Aleph, unlike tumah dechuyah or hutra b'tzibur, this one would apply even to a korban yachid. On the other hand, it works only for tumas basso, not for tumah of the koyan bringing it. But Rabbi Yehuda says if tzitz is not right now on the Kohen Gadol's forehead when the tumah takes place, according to Rashi, then nothing, then it doesn't help. The korban is not acceptable. Amale Rav Shimon. So Rav Shimon says to Rabbi Yehuda, how can you say that? Kohen Gadol b'yom kippurim yechiyach. Can't you prove the contrary from the avodah of Yom Kippur? She'ein odehu al mitzchay. During part of the avodah of Yom Kippur, there's the times when the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he's wearing big day lavan, but tzitz is not among them, and umaratze. And nevertheless, if tumah takes place, if something becomes tameh during Yom Kippur of one of these korbanos, then nevertheless they're acceptable. So that should show that even when the Kohen Gadol is not wearing the tzitz,
we learned that as long as the tzitz is in the Beis Hamikdash, then
that's according to the Shimon. That's according to the Shimon. According to the Yehuda, it actually has to be on his forehead. Wow. Yeah, we learned this. We had this discussion in Pesachim as well, and we had the same machlokas. Yeah. So Amar le Rabbi Yehuda, Hanach Kohen Gadol b'Yom Kippurim. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you know what? Forget about the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. That's a special case. Shetumah Hutra leibetzibur, because since it's Karbanas Tzibur, then therefore Tumah is Hutra. Tumah is completely Mutter. So in other words, then we don't need the tzitz. Well, the implication is the cloud of Shimon Sava Tumah Dechuya Hibetzibur. So obviously, Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't accept that, says that Tumah is only Dechuya, and if Tumah is Dechuya Betzibur, then that means we do need the tzitz. What's the mechanism that makes it possible for Tumah to be Dechuya Betzibur would be the fact that we have a tzitz. So therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, it comes out that Tumah is only Dechuya Betzibur, not Hutra. So there you go then. So Rabbi Nachman therefore holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Sheshes holds like Rabbi Shimon. Which, by the way, you know, usually when we have a machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. But over here, first of all, the Gemara has been bringing a bunch of contradictions against Rabbi Nachman, who were saying holds like Rabbi Yehuda. So even though, fine, Rabbi Nachman was able to fend for all of them, nevertheless, they're kind of doichkim. Second of all, anyway, we have a rule that when we have a machlokes between Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Sheshes in Dini Issa V'Heter, then the halacha is usually like Rabbi Sheshes, unlike in Dini Mominus, where the halacha is like Rabbi Nachman. So it is over here also. Therefore, the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Sheshes, which means in turn like Rabbi Shimon. So the... So what the Rambam does is that Rambam, it's interesting, the Rambam's psak over here is a little bit of a hybrid. When it comes to Dechuya or Hutra B'tzibur, the Rambam paskins like Rav Sheshes, that Tumah Dechuya B'tzibur, not Hutra like Rav Nachman, but rather Dechuya. On the other hand, when it comes to the matter of with the tzitz needed to be on the Kohen Gadol's forehead, there the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. So it seems to be a contradiction within what the Rambam says. If he's paskining Tumah Dechuya Hibetzibur, that comes out like Rabbi Shimon, not like Rabbi Yehuda. So what is he doing? So there's a lot of different answers that the Noisei Kelim on the Rambam and various Achronim bring. Maybe the Kesef Mishnah says maybe the Rambam considers that Rabbi Shimon's question against Rabbi Yehuda is not that strong. Maybe what it is, there are other Gemaras that imply that Tumah Dechuya B'tzibur. So therefore, the Rambam can be paskin according to those, and yet be paskin according to the Yehuda about this thing of that only when it's on his forehead. And there's a half a dozen different other answers to find for the Rambam, so he's not contradicting himself. Whatever the case, we see that the machlokas of Tumah Dechuya versus Hutra B'tzibur is actually the machlokas between the Yehuda and Reb Shimon. So the Gemara continues, Amar Abaya, the Nishbar HaTzitz, if the Tzitz was actually broken so that the Kohen Gadol physically can't wear it, Dekola Amalei Pligi Delei Meratze, then everybody is going to agree, even Reb Shimon is going to agree that the Tzitz can't work like that. How can it work when you can't even wear it? Ki Pligi Detoli B'Siksa, the Machlokas would be if the Tzitz is intact, but it's hanging on a peg. So, like you said before, Eli, that's in the Beis Hamikdash. Rabbi Yehuda Savar al Meitzach Benosa. Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, the Pasuk says that it has to be on his forehead, and then he bears away, then takes away the guilt, the Aveira of the Kodshim, so implying it has to be on his forehead. Rabbi Shimon Savar, Rabbi Shimon says, yeah, but the Pasuk also says, Tamid L'Ratzin Lifnei Hashem, that it's always for acceptance in front of Hashem. So my tamid. So you have to ask, what does the word tamid mean in that pasuk? Ilema tamid on mitzvah. It doesn't mean that literally it has to be on his forehead all the time. How could that be? Mimashkachasla. How would it be possible for him to be wearing that sits all the time? Milei boy meila b'sekise. Doesn't the Kohen Gadol sometimes have to go in the bathroom? Or milei boy meinam. Doesn't he sometimes need to sleep? So he can't be wearing that sits 24/7. Ella tamid menatzah. What it means is tamid means as far as the effect of it. It's always meratzah if korbanos become tamid. And we have to remember, by the way, of course, korbanos themselves are brought only during the day, but you have the evorim, the chalovim, the evorim, the pedorim, or whatever, can be burnt overnight, and those conceivably could become tamid, and you need the tzitz in order to make them acceptable. So therefore, Rav Shimon is saying, if it says tamid, means even at night, so even when the Kohen Gadol is sleeping and takes his tzitz and hangs it on a peg, still we're saying that it's meratzah. But not that he's actually wearing it all the time, because he can't, for example, be wearing it when he's sleeping. Actually, there is an interesting point in this connection, Does this mean, according to Reb Shimon, that, or at least, that the Kohen Gadol is allowed to wear the tzitz and the other bigdei kohuna outside the time of the avodah? Because otherwise, the Gemara should say very simply, yeah, he only wears them during the time of the avodah, and then he takes them off, and then he takes them off at night. Later in the Masechta, actually, we are going to have a discussion about that, where it's called bigdei kohuna nitnu lehonis, or ain't nitnu lehonis, are you allowed to have hanah from the bigdei kohuna outside of the time of the avodah? We're going to discuss that later at the beginning of the seventh perek, but over here, Tosfos Yeshanim says that maybe, even if we say that you can't wear the other bigdei kohuna all the time, maybe the tzitz is an exception. Precisely because it says tamid, then therefore the Kohen Gadol is allowed to wear it at other times outside the avodah.
The thing is that if he goes home, then he has to leave in Beis HaMikdash because they're burning the leftover kabbarnas the whole night.
No. But Reb Shimon is not saying it has to be in the Beis HaMikdash. Reb Shimon is saying, as according to Abaya anyway, that as long as the tzitz is intact, then we don't care whether it's in the Beis HaMikdash or not. So yeah, if he takes it home, then fine, it's still intact. But the point is, in other words, Tosfos Yeshanim says, for example, we have the story of Yanai HaMelech and Kiddushin. We had it not so long ago in Ein Yaakov, where Yanai is making a big party and he invites all the chachamim, and then one of his tzaduki friends tells him, test the chachamim and you'll see that they're against you, because you'll see that if you put on the tzitz and make them stand up, they're going to tell you that they object to your kingship or to your kohuna gdola. And that's exactly what happened. One of the chachamim said that there's a question whether your mother is kosher the kohuna because she was a shvuya, and the disaster happened because of that, because Yanai got angry at them and killed many of the chachamim. Anyway, the point is, there we have that he's putting on the tzitz outside of the time of the avodah. So fine, maybe the tzitz you're allowed to because of the word tamid, not necessarily whether that would apply to the other bigdei kohuna or not is a question that the Gemara discusses in some places, including we're going to have it in all. Or in Or Masechta and Daf Samaches Samachdes. Okay. Anyway, so Ella Tomid Menatzahu. So Reb Shimon says, obviously the Tomid must mean the effect of the tzitz happens all the time, whether the Kohen Gadol is wearing it or not. So the question is, Reb Yehuda Nami Hoksiv Tomid. Nu, according to Reb Yehuda, what are we doing with the word Tomid? The answer is, Ahu Tomid Shle Yasiach Daitim Menu. Reb Yehuda would say the word Tomid doesn't mean over there that. And the effect of the tzitz is constant. What it means is that when he's wearing it, he has to constantly have his attention focused on it. And this would be like what Rabbi Bar Avuna says. The Amar Rabbi Bar Avuna, Chayev Adam L'mash Mishvet Tefillah B'chol Shah V'Shah, a person has to touch his tefillin every so often when he's wearing them, and we can learn in order that he doesn't forget about them, and we can learn that Kavachoyme Mitzitz, and we can make a Kavachoyme from the tzitz. Madach the tzitz has only one name of Hashem, and it's as Kodesh Lashem. Omra Torah al mitzchay tabir, and yet the Torah says that it has to be on his forehead constantly. And again, Rabbi Yehuda says constantly means shlo yasiach daiti menu, means that constantly when it's on his forehead, he must not lose track of it. He must not forget about it. Tefillin, sheyesh ben askaris harbe. Tefillin have many names of Hashem in them. Alachas kama v'kama. How much more so that you can't be distracted from it. Now, what do we mean by hesach hadas? The fact is, I mean, in the olden days, people used to wear tefillin all day, and they would go to their work, and they'd be doing different other things while they're wearing tefillin. So there's a few possibilities. Rabbeinu Yonah says that the Hesach Hadas we're talking about over here, that's also in tefillin, is kalos rosh. You're right. It doesn't just mean distracted and not remembering at the moment that you're wearing tefillin, but it means kalos rosh, being lightheaded, being silly, whatever, that kind of thing. You're not allowed. That kind of thing would be a Hesach Hadas in tefillin. In Shulchan Aruch, it does paskin that way. So therefore, in other words, other kinds of things, if you're distracted by other things, well, so actually the Rambam adds another criteria. The Rambam adds that the Rambam says if a person is in pain or something like that, then also it's considered Hesach Hadas. So it does bring that in Shulchan Aruch as well. The Alter Rebbe brings that in parenthesis, that if a person is really, really, is really occupied and really, really distracted by the needs of his body, for example, because he's in pain, then that would also be considered hesach hadas. But if it's just a matter, for example, that a person is, let's say, wearing tefillin, and meanwhile he's learning, or meanwhile he's working, or whatever, and he forgets for a little while that he's wearing tefillin, then that's not so bad. That's not considered hesach hadas for this purpose. Nevertheless, the better thing is not to have hesach hadas at all, which in fact the poskim say is one reason why we don't wear tefillin all day nowadays. There is a third possibility that some of the Rishonim bring up, that hesach hadas in particular means over here that he's not allowed to pass wind, not allowed to pass gas while he's wearing tefillin, which of course we have to be careful of anyway, and that's another reason we wear tefillin all day, because it's very hard to be careful about that. With that said, though, this that we touch our tefillin in different places during davening is based on this. Now, during davening itself, we're not worried about hesach hadas. We're not worried about kalos rosh during davening itself. But nevertheless, we do have the minhag, therefore, to touch our shalyad and our shalrosh at various places in davening. And one idea that is, and the idea of that is based on this that we're saying over here, that you have to be mamashmish in your tefillin all the time. Okay. So anyway, so the point is, that Rabbi Yehuda would say the tamid by the tzitz doesn't mean that he's wearing the tefillin, or doesn't mean that he's wearing the tzitz all the time. It means that he constantly has to be thinking about the tzitz as long as he's wearing it. By the way, Tosfos points out that this kavachomer that we're making over here is not really a very good kavachomer, because when you think about it, the tzitz has the name of Hashem on the outside, whereas tefillin, it's covered by the batim. You have the shin on the tefillin, but at least the shin, fine, can be considered letters on the tefillin. The dal and the yod are only knots; they're not really considered letters as such. And of course, also on the tzitz, you have yudke vavke. On the tefillin, you only have shin dalad yud, which is, even if you say that all those count as letters, even if you say that the knots count as letters, that's still a name of lesser kedusha than yudke vavke. So Tosfos says you're right; it's not a true kavachomer. It's really only something dirabban. The point is, in other words, that this, at least by the tzitz, we say that he does have to have it in mind all the time. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's what the word tamid by the tzitz means. Okay, Ola Reb Shimon Dama Tomin Miratza. So okay, so according to Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon doesn't have to accept that drosha. He doesn't have to say that Tomid means that he constantly has to be thinking about it as long as he's wearing it. He can be saying that the Kohen is allowed to have Hesach Hadas while he's wearing the tzitz, and therefore Tomid means the effect of the tzitz. But Ola Reb Shimon Dama Tomin Miratza V'oksivam Mitzchev V'nasa. Fine, but what is he doing with Reb Yehuda's pasuk, which says that the tzitz is on the Kohen's forehead, a meitzach, Aaron, v'nasa, and he bears the guilt. So according to him, how is that going to work out? How's that going to work out? If according to Reb Shimon, it works even when it's not on his forehead. The answer is, Reb Shimon would say, very simple. That comes to tell us, where does he wear the tzitz? Otherwise, how are you going to know where on his body he's supposed to wear it? V'r Reb Yehuda. What does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? Where does he learn that from? So nafkalei me'al mitzchay. He learns that from the fact that it says al mitzchay on his forehead. Meaning, in other words, it says more than once in the pasuk, in the psukim over there, that the tzitz has to be on his forehead. And later on in that pasuk, it continues, v'hoyal mitzchay tamid. So fine, from al mitzchay, you know that has to be on his forehead. Therefore, the earlier al mitzach must be, when does it have its effect? When it's on his forehead. So the question is, can't Reb Shimon learn that it has to be on his forehead from there? Why does he say al meitzach aaron to teach us where it is? He wants to say nochanami. You're right. In fact, Reb Shimon could learn from there. El al mitzchev v'nasa my avodle. So what is he doing with al mitzchev v'nasa? Amalach roi lemeitzach meratza. Reb Shimon would say, listen, we did say before that if the tzitz is broken, then it doesn't work. This is where we learn it from. Al meitzach means only if it's roi to go on his forehead, meratza. Only then does it help to make karbonas kosher. If it's not roi to go on his forehead, then it's not meratza. La puki nishber atzitz. Therefore, that's exactly where we're learning that if the tzitz is broken, then deloy meratza, that doesn't work. So Reb Shimon says that's exactly. So one pasuk is teaching us that if it's broken, it doesn't work, and the other part of the pasuk is teaching us that it goes on his forehead. Ula Rabbi Yehuda Nishma Tzitz Minole. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, where are we learning that if the tzitz is broken, it's no good? Now, Tosfos is trying to ask, what's the question? Of course, if it's broken, he can't wear it on his forehead. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it has to be on his forehead to work. So obviously, that it has to be on his forehead includes that it has to be intact. Tosfos Hashanim says, if we only had one pasuk, then Rabbi Yehuda would be like Rabbi Shimon. He would say that it only depends whether it's broken or whether it's intact. He wouldn't know that it applies also whether it's on his forehead. Once we have two psukim, then necessarily we have to say one of them tells us it goes on that one of them tells us if it's broken, it doesn't work. The other one tells us even if it's not broken, it doesn't work unless it's on his forehead. So where's Rabbi Yehuda learning that from? So we also need another one to tell us where the tzitz actually goes. So in other words, in effect, we need three psukim, and we only have two. So the answer is, he would say, nafkalim imetzach mitzchoy. He learns that the Torah could have said, v'hoya al metzach tomid, and instead it says mitzchoy. Therefore, you can learn two things from it. Number one, that it has to be on his forehead. And number two, that only when it's on its forehead does it help as far as the korbanos. Reb Shimon, Meitzach Mitzchay leMashmalay. Whereas Reb Shimon would say, I don't think that Meitzach and Mitzchay is a significant difference. I don't hold that we can darshin from the fact that it could have said Meitzach and instead it says Mitzchay. I don't hold that we can darshin anything from that. Therefore, we only have two psukim. One of them teaches us where it has to go. The other one teaches us if it's broken, it doesn't work. Nothing to teach us that if it's not on his forehead, it's no good. And therefore, according to Reb Shimon, even if it's not on his forehead, it still has the effect on Kodshim. Whereas again, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says we have three things to learn from: the fact that it says Meitzach, the fact that instead it says Mitzchoy, and the fact that it again says V'hoya al Mitzchoy Tomid. And therefore, we have all three, and therefore one of them teaches us where it goes on his forehead. The other one teaches us if it's broken, it's no good. And the third one teaches us that even if it's still intact, it's no good as far as the korbanos unless he's wearing it. Okay, again, the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Yehuda as far as that particular machlokes, but as far as the previous one, where the Tumah d'chuya or hutra, there he paskins like Rav Sheshes, which means in turn like Rav Shimon, that Tumah is only d'chuya but tzibur, and therefore that you need the tzitz to make it acceptable, not that it's hutra. Okay, so we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and then get into more details about the Kohen Gadol and the preparations for him before Yom Kippur.
Yes, Shikai. Okay. Have a wonderful day.
See you.